Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Can this be the last time we ever talk about Ed and Lorraine Warren?
Yes, they suck. They're such grifters.
They are such grifters. Ugh, I'm so glad we're on the same page.
The worst. And he was a creep, I think.
Oh, yeah? Good to know.
Ugh.
Hi, Jillian Benzavalli.
Hi, Patrick Hines.
What if this was the week I was like, thank God they finally got the Exorcism one right?
It's never gonna happen.
Girl, you may have heard I'm out on the road doing a little tour.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm doing my show. We're having so much fun. The whole night is just about making new friends. I make you laugh for an hour with a silly story about Bea Arthur and her hating me and being mean to me. But the whole night is just like getting the listeners together. I hang out before the show, I hang out after the show, we go to the bar and we just make new friends and we have a ton of fun. My next set of shows, so on June 6th, I'll be in Boston. On June 23rd, I'll be in St. Louis. And on June 26th, I'll be in New York City, my hometown.
Fun.
Doing my show for Pride Weekend. If you're looking for something to do for Pride Weekend, let it be that. It's going to be so, 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 so fun. You can get all the information and tickets at patricktours.com.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell them the other exciting thing?
We're also on YouTube.
I mean, it's going so well.
Is it? Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I know you don't look at it, but it's okay. We look great. It's really fun. People are subscribing. Just go there. It's True Crime Obsessed Podcast. Subscribe. Watch. Like, if you want to see the antics in real time, like, that's where you're going to see them.
It's all happening over on YouTube, I've heard.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
All happening over there. What are we talking about today, girl?
All right, so we're talking about The Devil on Trial on Netflix.
When I was 11, and he was possessed by the devil.
A bizarre murder trial gets underway tomorrow.
The devil made me do it.
I said, why am I here? And they said, well, you just killed your friend.
The nature of our defense has never been used in the United States is demonic possession.
But the tale really begins at the end of this driveway where the Brookfield couple, whose 11-year-old son began acting strangely.
You can feel something watching you.
We didn't believe him at first.
David said this entity spoke.
He told David he wants his soul today.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ghost hunters, Ed and Lorraine Warren.
We instantly have on-screen text that says this film contains recreated scenes based on documented events. As that is on the screen, closed captions, demonic growl. It says. Then it says, all the audio recordings and photographs are real. Are they, Netflix?
I mean...
You're bullshitting me right out the gate.
Do you remember all those years ago when we did the Halloween thing where we just did like a demonic possession?
One ill-fated October, we did a bunch of like... You know, Zach Bagans bullshit
Yeah. This feels very much in that vein.
It's such bullshit because, like, someone was actually murdered. And well, it's just not fair and it's rude.
No, and I will say we eventually get to the truth teller. So, like, it's a little bit ridiculous, but then it gets good in the end. And I was like, thank the Lord.
Yeah. So we meet David Glatzel. When I was 11, I was possessed by the devil. I'm like, oh, nice to meet you, David. When I was 11, I was making friendship bracelets and collecting stickers. So.
And being pushed off the thing at Action Park.
So a little different.
I know.
He also says he's never spoken to anyone about this. And I'm sorry, but I just don't believe him.
Absolutely not.
Of course you've spoken about that time you were possessed by the devil.
Of course. And it wasn't like a one-off. It was like for many weeks or something.
Uh-huh.
Like
like poops.
Sure, Jan. I'm sure it was. It was that fun 6 weeks he had.
It's real. But like at the end of the day, I think that he believes it. And I think that he was abused by his parents.
He was.
You know what I mean?
Because David is here to set the record straight.
I would love to tell you my story about the possession and the murder and Arnie Johnson. I'd like to make sure my family's portrayed with the accuracy that it should be. I know some people have fabricated some stories, and I'm not happy with that.
And I want to talk about the murder. And I'm like, what
the murder? I know.
Like, holy shit.
Yeah. And so David's whole family is here. We got Alan, the middle brother, and then Carl, the older brother.
Alan calls himself, his words, typical middle child syndrome. And yeah. I'm like, what is that? So I Googled it. Google isn't like not nice about it.
Oh, what do they say?
Google says it's a hypothetical condition and pop culture stereotype, which is fine. Because like
I'm the middle child.
It's like
so...
not all middle children, I guess.
Yeah, lay it on me.
It suggests middle children may have certain characteristics and relationship issues due to their birth order. These characteristics can include, this is the AI overview, so take it a pound of salt.
Yeah.
Feeling ignored. You feel overlooked or neglected by your parents.
Uh-huh.
Low self-esteem, which you don't worry about at all. Which you've told me.
No, I don't.
Something you like are very luckily don't suffer
it's
from.
It's like the one privilege I've ever had.
Yeah. Seeking attention, which... Yeah.
No.
Check. Independence. Middle children may develop a strong sense of independence as a coping mechanism. And uh-huh. I'm like, why can't they just be independent as a coping mechanism?
Totally.
They're like talking a lot of shit.
Well, I've like definitely come to terms lately with the fact that like my mom did the best she could, but like we were barely parented. Like my mom was raising four kids and like working like her ass off to like support us.
Yeah.
And so like all of those things apply to me, but I also like liked being the middle child.
Then it just goes from like alienation to competition to they're really good mediators because you were always this is all bullshit.
No.
Like, I just want the middle children to like come forward what has been your experience
with
that? Because Alan is like, I'm totally a middle child.
Yeah,
I'm like, what, Alan?
I was also just like seeing a TikTok about how like middle children tend to be the most successful of the children.
That was made by a middle child. Wouldn't you? Like,
yeah, but I mean, in my case, it's true, and I don't mean like necessarily. I love my job. I'm the only one of my siblings that's still married to my original husband.
It sounds like you get
husband.
A lot of shit.
I know.
Based on what Google tells me, that like, of course, someone needs to take the power back.
Oh my God!
And make a TikTok about it. Anyway,
that was definitely made by a middle child.
That's like whatever you see, like only children are the best. Guess who probably made that TikTok?
100%. 100%.
Travel.
Girl, this message is sponsored by Greenlight. We all know this. Greenlight is the debit card and money app for families that helps kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely.
Yeah, and also the parents are involved too.
Yes.
Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on kids' spending and saving.
So this is, I say this every week. We have this with Daisy. I love it. You can customize the debit card. We've got a picture of Golden on it. I love talking to Daisy about money. I never had any of that financial planning when I was a kid. Nobody taught me anything. I love getting to like go over the app with Daisy. She can see what's in her account. She can see us using the allowance feature, so she sees that she gets her allowance every week, and then we can talk about what she wants to save for and what she wants to spend her money on.
It's demystifying it.
It is,
you
for
know?
Sure.
And then kids and teens, too, can build money confidence and skills in a more fun and accessible way.
Exactly. And maybe, girl, that's why millions of parents and kids, just like me and Steve and Daisy, are already learning about money on Greenlight, the number one family finance safety app.
Yeah, they also have the chores feature, where you can set up one-time or recurring chores. You can customize it to your household. You can reward kids with an allowance for a job well done. We're all keeping track.
She asks about it every single week. Every Friday as we're getting into the weekend, it's macaroni and cheese and Greenlight time.
Girl after my own heart.
So fam, start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/TCO.
That's greenlight.com/TCO to get started.
Greenlight.com/TCO and customize that debit card.
That's right. So Carl is the oldest brother.
Now, we're going to be told by Alan that Carl was kind of a bully, and we're going to find out...
An idiot. He calls him an idiot.
But we're going to find out at the end what was really going on with Carl.
Alan's like, Carl made things difficult all the time. I'm like, the truth tellers usually do, Alan.
And that's the thing, is that Carl is the only one who doesn't believe any of this. So I thought like
We're super annoying. The truth tellers are annoying.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You hate to see us coming.
I know.
Because we ruin everyone's, quote, good time.
Uh-huh.
But we're very annoying.
Yeah, especially when... when, like, this family was promised the world in exchange for their trauma, and Carl was the one that was like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, because Carl is here.
Yes.
And he basically says that Alan was a little mama's boy. Like, that's sort of his thing. I'm like, they are fighting. Again, his words, but like...
Alan back in the day was just different. David and I would help my father and work, you know, whether in the garage or stuff, and Alan really didn't want to get dirty, so he stayed with my mother most of the time. You know, he could bake a good cake, I can tell you that much, but he's just a little different than us.
He wanted to bake cakes, and I'm like, what's so bad about that?
I was waiting for Alan to be gay. Like, that's what I thought he was saying, was that he's different, and he liked to spend time with mom.
Like, it's a bad thing.
Right, exactly.
So
but no, it was just that, like, I think that, like, working on the truck and, like, mowing the lawn didn't appeal to a lot of us, Carl.
They just want to fight with each other, and right, they're doing it totally through Netflix,
yeah.
I don't appreciate it.
Right, because they're not interviewed in the same room. We're going to find out in the end that none of them talk to each other anymore.
Right, like, whatever. So Debbie's the sister, and she's not here, but she's a major part of the story. So she's renting a house in... I think it's Newtown.
Newtown,
right?
Newtown, not Newton.
Newtown.
No, yeah, yeah.
She was moving in with her boyfriend, Arnie.
And Arnie's here.
Arnie is here.
Yeah.
So it's July 2nd, 1980. Everyone goes to help them move into the house. David, the youngest, the possessee.
Yeah, the possessee,
is
yes.
sweeping. And
right.
Debbie assigns him the primary bedroom. Like, go up there, kind of to get him out of the way.
Debbie's like, I gave all of my brothers chores to do in my new rental. I was like, Debbie, you must be the oldest or something because you got some power.
So Debbie is not here, but we have this old interview footage of her from God knows when. So that's when we're hearing her voice. It's from like old footage.
Yeah.
So after a while, David's like upstairs sweeping. He runs out of the house. He's super upset. He wants to go home right now. But as he says, I didn't tell anyone why.
Right. So they sit down for dinner that night and he finally explains what happened. And he said he was alone in the bedroom, but he could feel something.
And then I was pushed backwards onto the bed. I seen this image. It looked like the devil from a Halloween costume. His eyes were black, solid black, just like a chunk of coal. And it scared me.
With black eyes, all I can think of is like the devil from Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
Gary Marshall.
Right. And then Penny Marshall is there.
Penny Marshall, his sister plays his wife, which why have we never talked
Sarah
about
Jessica
that?
Parker. One must not speak to master in such a manner.
I think it's so creepy that Penny and Gary Marshall play brother and sister. That
but
is so weird.
A rated PG Disney movie where they're just bickering. There's no, you know, the whole point is that she's so annoyed by him.
Anyway, but like basically.
The devil speaks to David.
Right, exactly.
He was warning David. He told me to beware. He wants my soul. He's coming for me.
Yeah.
David insists that it's for real.
Yeah.
Everyone kind of ignores it and goes to bed. And I guess realistically, like, what exactly are your options here?
Truly.
Like, I don't know what you do.
Traumatized, but right. I mean, like, this is also the 80s where nobody actually did, you know what I mean? Like,
and we'll learn later that his mother was abusing them. But I guess it's sort of like, okay, David, like, we'll just make you feel safe and okay, and then we'll go to bed and hopefully we'll all forget about it tomorrow. That's what everyone's doing.
But David can't sleep. And he says, like, he just is lying there in bed being tormented by the devil. He had this image, something was coming. He said, I could see it coming closer and closer towards the house. Mm-hmm. And then he looks out the bedroom window and he sees a figure in the yard.
So he's like awake all night in the dark. He doesn't sleep. Nothing happens. He's just having like visions of things happening.
Right.
Now, Judy, the mom, is worried. And her first call is to Father Dennis.
Right. Which I guess isn't that uncommon for the time or whatever.
Whatever.
But
she's like, you gotta, and it's not about her son. It's you gotta go bless.
You gotta go bless my house.
My daughter's new house.
But
she wants him to bless Judy's new house.
This I was so confused because he never goes back into this house, but he remains possessed by this demon from that house.
That's kind of all it takes.
Right.
But
yeah,
it's
but
again, to that point, Judy, the mom, maybe worry about your kid who's having these hallucinations and visions or is maybe possibly possessed, but it's like, we got to get Father Dennis over here to bless the house. It's like, okay.
He brings holy oil, holy water, and incense.
I'm like, those two things don't mix, oil
and
water.
Who knew that Father Dennis was a lesbian? Like, my mother lived with all of these potions in her room at all times.
Of course we do. We all have it.
The sheer amount of incense I grew up smelling.
Oh.
I mean, my mother burned patchouli incense from morning to night
Wow.
Day and night, like a proper lesbian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I too have a cabinet full of incense.
Do you really?
Of course. I always have incense. Either the sticks I'm like kind of off of because I keep getting these like black pieces of soot everywhere. But I have another option. I have the powder ones where you just like put it in like a vessel and burn it from the candle like underneath.
You're such a witch.
It's pretty great. So at 3 a.m., David wakes up screaming.
The house rumbled. Like someone had drove a truck into it.
It sounded like a UFO was literally landing on top of the house.
Alan, Mr. Middlechild, says it sounded like a UFO was literally landing on top of the house.
This goes on for 30 or 40 seconds, and then the house is quiet. Now, every member of this family is in the house, and they are all a part of this.
And, like, David is screaming. He's here. It's evil. He's running and screaming all over the place. Lights are flashing. Things are falling and breaking. After 30 seconds, it just stops.
Right.
And Middlechild Alan is like, all right, we got a ghost problem. Who are you going to call?
Yeah.
Oh, that movie hadn't even come out yet. Ghostbusters didn't even exist when this was happening.
This is why Ed and Lorraine Warren see an opening.
Well, a neighbor of theirs tells their family about Ed and Lorraine Warren. They are very famous, air quotes, demonologists.
We say that word like it's a normal word.
It's
like,
not.
He like introduces himself to people as a demonologist.
Well, so they're involved in the Amityville case, right?
I'm a bourbonologist henceforth, I'm a bourbonologist.
Like the movie The Conjuring, which is an excellent movie, but like the case is, this case is actually what the third Conjuring movie is based on because it's called The Devil Made Me Do It.
Oh.
The first Conjuring is excellent.
So that's, The Conjuring is about Ed and Lorraine Warren, right?
Yeah.
Are they given those names in the movie?
Yes, they are. They are playing themselves.
Yes, and it's Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga.
Yep.
And do they do the Amityville one?
They might. It's like a whole Conjuring universe. I don't know. The first one is very good. If you could separate yourself from the fact that the Warrens are bullshit, it's a good horror movie.
Okay.
Like, it's a good movie.
And you promised me in this episode we're going to talk about the haunted Raggedy Ann doll.
Of course.
Okay.
So they've done 3,000 cases, hauntings, possessions, exorcisms.
Yeah.
Chris McKinnell is their grandson, and he's here to say,
I was so proud of my grandparents when I was growing up. I would see them in the newspaper or on television. And it was just so cool. But on the other hand, I was also the weird kid because I had these creepy grandparents.
He was the weird kid with creepy grandparents, which I say, Chris, come sit next to me.
Yeah. And I do love that we've never seen him before, which what I mean by that is he hasn't tried to make himself famous for being their grandson.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure like in that paranormal universe or whatever, like people probably know him, but this is the first I'd ever heard of him. And I was like, good for you, kid.
Well, the horrible murder of a family in Amityville, New York, put the Warrens on the map. But the truth is that a guy murdered his entire family. It was a very real thing.
Yeah.
And the Warrens come in and do that rude thing about victims by making it this like spooky, ooky story.
Well, because what happened was like the Amityville horror case is that a family was murdered in that house and then a new family moved in and then claimed to be haunted by the DeFeo son who did that killing.
And it's all been debunked. It's all bullshit.
It's all bullshit. It didn't stop a 21-year-old Patrick from renting a car and driving out to see the house.
Sure.
I was one of the gawkers. I was an asshole. And there were people coming out of the house. And like this happens, we've talked about this, how they had to change the, because I think it's like 11 Ocean Boulevard or whatever.
Something.
11 Boulevard or whatever. And they've had to like change the numbers on the street, but I'm like, we all know what that house looks like.
I know. And it's really shitty, but the Warrens were like, ooh, we can capitalize on this.
And what they were saying in this part of the movie is that they've been doing hauntings for years and years, but the Amityville one, like you said, made them famous.
Right. So this family, thanks to their neighbor, calls the Warrens.
No, I was like, on their landline? Like, do you just like, I guess you just call them on the phone?
Yeah.
That's wild.
I know. So David has not yet been seen by a doctor yet.
Yeah.
So the Warrens bring their own doctor. So Ed Warren's super nice. Lorraine's super nice. The doctor's super nice.
Yeah.
The doctor took David aside, took his blood pressure, stuff like that. He was tested psychologically, proven to be completely normal.
Dr. Tony never said that I was off my rocker or anything like that. He said I was a normal kid.
And in 5 minutes flat says there's not a psychological issue at play here. This is absolutely demonic possession.
It's got to be a demonic possession.
More on-screen text. The following audio was recorded between the Warrens and the Glatzels in the summer of 1980. So let's just go through this because Judy, the mom, wants this thing dealt with and she wants it dealt with now. She wants the Warrens to come in and cure everything, which is never good because that'll only lead to like having blinders on and bad, hasty decisions, right? And they're, whatever. What's interesting though is on the tape, Daniel isn't really that upset.
Right.
And I'm thinking, like, maybe it's a kid thing. Like, all the adults are staring at you and, like, you're the problem because you're the one possessed by the demon. And, like, he's like, yeah, I don't know. He wants my soul. Like, whatever. Leave me alone. Right. Like, he's not, I'm like.
He's not doing it for the back row yet. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's not doing it for the audience.
So Ed and Lorraine Warren need to see this demon for themselves. That's how they work, right?
Yeah.
So they use what they call religious provocation to see if this case is worth their time. No demon, no warrants. Their demon, Pixar didn't happen.
Yeah,
demon
yeah,
didn't
yeah,
happen.
Yeah, yeah.
They're walking.
Yeah.
So Ed is going to provoke the demon. And he wants to see, quote, physical manifestations occurring.
Right.
So Ed's like, all right, you son of a bitch. Like, like, show yourself.
He says, prove it by banging on the table 3 times.
And suddenly.
Bang. 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 It sounded like someone took a sledgehammer and started trying to break their way through the kitchen floor. The entire kitchen started to shake.
The lights were flickering. Everybody felt it.
There are 3 bangs as if something was trying to come through the door. Now that we don't have audio of.
How? This is what I do not understand. We hear the entire conversation leading up to this, then all hell breaks loose and we don't hear any of the audio.
We just weirdly don't have audio of this major thing that Ed Warren really, really, really needs to see and hear before he moves forward.
Right.
It's like the opposite of the Jesse Ms. Kelly false confession, where we don't hear the 12 hours of them coaching him and we just hear the last 45 minutes of them coaching him.
Yeah.
But what about those other 12 hours?
Right.
It's like, oh, you weirdly don't have that? That's how I feel about this.
And it's also like, why are we the only ones saying this? You know what I mean? Like, what? Like, what?
But apparently, this thing that we don't hear.
Yeah.
Lorraine Warren walks over to Ed and says, there's a large, dark, evil presence by that little boy.
And suddenly that little boy, David, starts saying, he's here, he wants to hurt me, we're all going to be punished because I'm talking to
right.
you.
So this wasn't just like your regular run-of-the-mill ghost. This is a demonic entity. And
right.
we're like, great.
Right. Travel down the road and back again. Girl, Ritual is back. You know how we're in this era of these like supplement companies like getting on TikTok and Instagram saying how like they're keeping their proprietary formulas secret and all of that?
Yeah, and then you don't know what's actually in it. Is it real? Can you believe it? Is it snake oil? What's going on?
Make it make sense that anybody would not want to know what they're putting in their bodies. No, Ritual is the opposite. They are traceable and transparent. They were built on the idea of knowing what you're getting and what you're putting in your body.
Yeah, and they have it all out there for you. So you can see all the results of their clinical trials and learn more about Ritual's commitment to clinical trials at ritual.com. So they're laying it all out there for you.
Totally. And speaking of their clinical trial, listen to these results. Taking the Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin increased vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks.
Yeah, so
put that on TikTok and smoke it.
I mean, or just take it every day. Their Essential for Women 18 Plus Multi contains 9 key nutrients in 2 delayed release capsules, so it's designed for optimal absorption per day. So it's really gentle on the stomach. It has a minty essence that makes it really easy to take pills if you're one of those people that has trouble taking pills. Hi, that's
yes.
me.
Also, Essential for Women is third-party tested for heavy metals and Clean Label Project certified.
Yeah, you can trust what you're putting in your body, finally,
that's
for once.
The whole point. So fam, no more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust.
Get 25% off your first month only at ritual.com/TCO.
Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today.
That's ritual.com/TCO for 25% off.
You didn't even mention that it's minty fresh.
Yes, I did. Oh, I said minty essence.
Okay, great.
I never forget the minty essence. So the grandson is here to explain how the Warrens think hauntings progress.
It's a 5-step program, everybody.
Step 1. Permission.
Yes.
Sounds a little victim blamey to me, but you allow them in somehow. Like you do a seance or you play with a Ouija board or whatever.
Yeah.
Number 2. Infestation.
Uh-huh.
The spirits are in your house, but external to you completely. Kind of like a friendly ghost.
Yeah.
A loved one coming to say hello. This is totally normal.
It's like Jesus going to visit, what's her name? Lori Vallow in the prison. You know what I mean?
Right. If you've ever had like an experience in your house, which you and I have both had, that's infestation, which is a pretty heavy word for like the friendly ghost. Your loved one just coming to say hello. That doesn't seem like an infestation
My
to me.
My house is suddenly infested by grandma.
Like, no. Number 3, oppression.
That's when an entity is starting to take over your free will. But you're exhibiting much darker impulses, much more negative behaviors. In incredibly rare circumstances, it moves on to complete possession.
And in incredibly rare cases, it progresses to complete possession. And I'm like, aren't we skipping step 4?
What's step 4?
No. possession is step four. Step five is death.
Oh,
because
right.
they just go through it was confusing at first. I was like, what? The grandson is like, there are five steps, but he only talks about four.
Right.
Give it a goog. Step five is death. But so, and I'm like, kept that one out of your little movie, did you, Netflix?
Uh-huh. Because it's not, it doesn't have to even be death of the person who's possessed. It could be them killing somebody.
Right. Now, Ed Warren says that Daniel is in step three, which is oppression. This is when, like, they start taking over in a negative way.
Yes.
He's going to go talk to the archbishop to, quote, see what we're dealing with. And I'm like, can we not have any fun without the church peeking over our shoulder?
And my whole thing is like, Ed Warren could just get the archbishop on the phone. You know what I mean?
They're all in cahoots.
Do you believe in demonic possession?
I spoke to someone once who, he was a Jesuit priest.
Okay.
Who said that he has had experiences and he would not talk about it.
Yeah.
That is my only connection with it, where this person who, like, looking back, I'm like, oh, he's not the most reliable narrator. But he very much, he's not the Ed and Lorraine Warren where, like, they want to talk about it.
Yeah.
He very much did not want to speak about it.
I just, like, do I believe, like, I believe in heaven. I believe in God. I pray. But do I believe in hell and the devil? I don't know. I don't think I do.
No, but do you believe in entities and ghosts and spirits?
Yeah, totally,
no?
All yeah. of that stuff. But, like, the idea of, like, being, like, demonically possessed, I don't know.
It is interesting, like, to sort of take the power back from horror movies that have to do with this. It's sort of like, well, if they were, like, all powerful and demonic, why can't they just kill you right now? Like, it's always a very slow burn with these motherfuckers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's that about?
I also just, like, don't really trust the church. You know what I mean?
Never.
And it's also, like, we're also going to learn that, like, a lot of these priests just don't want to deal with the demons anyway.
Right. <You know? laughs> So the family starts documenting everything, like Polaroids, audio recordings. And remember, it's 1980, so, like, they can only do so much.
But I feel like they could have done more. You know what I mean? Like, there were video cameras. You know what I mean? Like, we get audio recordings, but no video.
Right.
I don't know.
But, like, everyone is, quote, involved. Like, no one's sleeping. Everyone is taking turns just sitting and watching David.
And that just, I was listening to that this morning as I was taking notes on this, and I'm like, that sounds so fucking exhausting. Like, it's summer
break. For everybody.
Yeah. These kids can't play outside. They've got to watch David all day, all night. No one can sleep. It sounds awful.
And it's also like David has an audience.
Exactly.
Or, and like, either that or there's, like, pressure for him to perform. Because now, like, I'm sure his mother's like, the fucking Warrens are here. You better wake that demon up so we can make some fucking money.
Yeah.
So more on-screen text. The following photographs and audio recordings were made by the Glatzel family in August and September of 1980.
I'm your mother.
Calling his mother a douchebag, acting like he's being jealous.
That should perk your ears up a little bit.
I know. The howling and the growling, it's very unsettling to listen to, but it sounds so fake.
But here's what happens. So you will die in the demonic voice.
Yeah.
Judy, the mom, goes, who are you and what are you? And David slash the demon says, none of your business.
Yeah.
And immediately I'm like, that's weird. Then Judy's like, I am your mother. And I'm like, this just sounds like a family bickering. But when David the demon says, you're a douchebag, I went, I'm out.
I know.
That's what an 11-year-old boy would say.
Exactly.
This is absolutely not possession.
And my question is, like, to the demon, I ask, what's the end game? If you don't want to tell the mother who you are, what's the point here? What are you trying to do?
Well, remember in The Exorcist, which, problematic aside, because, like, Linda Blair was actually very hurt.
I think we did this
on an after party. She really, like, hurt her back. Like,
and she was only, like, 13 or something?
She is excellent in that
movie.
Yeah,
she is.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
she is, like, holy shit. She's incredible. But that movie, I think it's a great movie. It's, like, one of my favorite Halloween movies. But it's hard to watch because while she was writhing around on the bed, she actually really hurt herself. So those screams you hear are her, like, in real pain.
Oh.
And they use the take. It's, like, really shitty.
Yeah.
But Father Marin says to Father Damien, he says, he is a liar. The demon's a liar. He will lie to confuse us, but he will also mix lies with the truth to attack us. I'm like, first of all, that's true of all toxic and manipulative people. Not just demonic entities.
Not just demonic entities.
But, like, we're not getting any of that here. This is not Pazuzu we're dealing with. This is an 11-year-old kid with a lot of eyes on him. And the mother saying, you better do it for the cheap seats in the back.
Totally.
The Warrens are here and I want some money.
Thank the Lord no one ever gave me this opportunity, because I was also a young, chubby child desperate for attention.
Sure.
I would have
been
the most possessed.
Right.
I would have been the best possessed 11-year-old.
Right.
They would have written books about me.
Sure.
Oh, my God.
You would have made the Warrens a ton of money, and you wouldn't have seen a dime of it.
I know. I missed a real opportunity here, though. You know what I mean?
It's true. So, like, David and or the demon is, like, barking and laughing. The family's praying over him. You listen to this in 2 seconds, and you're like, this is an 11-year-old boy being an 11-year-old boy. There's no way. Once he said douchebag, I'm like, I'm out.
And he doesn't sound right, because it's like the devil would be like, right, the devil would be using real cuss words.
Right. It's interesting, though, like because we see a lot of these like photographs.
Yeah.
It's what's interesting is that I guess all of this evidence happened in the same night because it looks like everyone's wearing the same clothes in all of the evidence photos.
Right.
Like a little like demonic photo shoot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. And also, like, I obviously I think this is fake and I think the family is faking it, but I don't think they're talking about. I don't think like I think they all want to believe it's really happening.
I agree.
And they all want like it's this.
They want to make Ed and Lorraine happy.
Exactly.
So they're sort of everyone's performing.
Yes, yes, yes.
So things are getting worse and worse. David is physically and violently attacking people on a regular basis. It's also you're an 11-year-old kid and you can get away with doing and saying anything because like that demon did it. Literally, the devil made me do it. Give me a break.
But people are also feeling like his mom is unsafe around him. Like this is why people have to be around. He's like punching his mother.
Also, no one wants a second opinion. We saw one doctor, and it was Ed and Lorraine Warren's best friend, the doctor they have on call. Like, we're not going to a therapist.
No, they all want this to be true. It's like every time somebody thinks their father is a Zodiac, they say, like, oh, my God, that'd be so horrible, secretly praying
100%.
That their dad is a Zodiac.
Everyone except the dad. The dad is not interested in this. And, in fact, we finally see a photo of him, and he's wearing a trucker hat that says fuck off.
Yes.
My father at this point thought David was just having a mental health issue. Thought we were all feeding into it. So he kind of just locked himself away. He was working two jobs and come home and sleep.
But he's not doing anything to protect his son. This makes me crazy because the dad is 100% right here. His son is being abused.
Yes.
He's watching it happen and he's not stepping in to stop it.
So he disassociates.
Yeah.
And he's not involved in any of it. Now, the rest of the family is on team possession.
Yes.
It is for sure demonic possession. Nothing will change their minds. They won't even consider another doctor. But the thing is, the only way to stop this is an exorcism.
I mean, like, that is just so extreme. An exorcism.
What's more extreme is that Ed Warren calls himself and Lorraine the supernatural police department. We need to stop. But they have to bring the culprits up to headquarters, which is the church.
I mean, like, and then Brother Alan goes, the church doesn't just give out exorcisms like candy. I didn't realize the amount of paperwork you need to get an exorcism.
It's a shit ton of paperwork.
To get an exorcism.
It's like, here we are again, the church taking all the fun out of all of this.
Can't
we just do our own exorcism?
Get that Ouija board. Have you seen that TikTok of the dad downstairs? He's like, and like the in-video text is like, my daughter and five of her friends are upstairs playing with the Ouija board and he turns the breaker off so the light. Let's go.
Oh my God.
I'm going to be that dad.
With the Ouija board. That's what you hope for.
No. Are you okay with Ouija boards or are we inviting spirits in?
I don't really do the Ouija board thing. I did when I was a kid, like everyone did at a sleepover or whatever. But I'm a little more, no, I don't do the Ouija board thing. I don't necessarily think that it's going to invite people in, but I do think you have to be careful about that.
Yeah. Yeah. God, do we believe in this or not?
I
guess we do.
Wow.
We meet Father Maximos.
He's here to, like, it's weird because he's here to tell us how hard it is to get approval, but then it doesn't really, like, once we learn that this family gets approval, I'm like, it's not that hard to get approval.
No, and, like, Father Maximus, we'll learn more about him in a second, but he's the one who tells us that, like, it's kind of hard to get the approval because priests don't want to deal with the devil. You think that the priests go into this line of work hoping that the one day they're going to bring in that shitty kid that they're going to get to exorcise.
Right.
And, like, I mean, isn't the whole point of being a priest to beat the devil? Like, isn't that the whole idea?
I could make some horribly dark jokes right now, and I won't. I don't know if that's the point.
But I mean,
if you go into like the priesthood or whatever, I don't know.
If you're going to do it and you're presented with the opportunity to encounter the devil and win, like, can you think of a better day of your job?
I mean, I think that's like the ultimate,
yeah.
But I think you kind of go in, I would assume, I've never had the drive to do it, but like, that's like, oh my, I mean, wouldn't that be crazy? You know, like, I think
Father
you go
Maximus
in thinking.
Father says that they don't want to do it. They don't want to tussle with the devil.
Well, Father Maximus is a Russian Orthodox priest, but he's here to tell us about the Roman Catholic Church and their approval process. So I'm like, okay.
Well, because the whole idea with this guy is that he worked with the Warrens. Because,
well, and that's the thing.
Yeah.
The only doctor they have is their best friend. The only priest that'll talk is their best friend.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
hello,
yeah, yeah.
Everyone's on the take here.
Because Father Maximus wanted to, like, he was the one who wanted to look evil in the face. He wanted to know if evil was really real.
Right. So they get some cardinal to show up for the exorcism party.
cardinal from the Catholic Church showed up. They dressed completely in red. And he also drove a red Porsche.
In a fucking Porsche. And I was like, how about that vow of poverty, Father?
It's a red Porsche.
He shows up in a Porsche.
Dressed in red. Are they dressed in red because of the cardinal, like the bird?
I don't know.
I was
a Catholic for a long time, and I was an altar boy, which I loved, by the way. I love, because it's theater. Like, you get to, like, be on the altar with the Father and, like, shake the bells and all that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I will never forget the one time I was doing Mass with Father Healy, and I was on the altar, and I was so in a lustful moment thinking about, are you ready for this? Kirk Cameron. I missed
the
my
irony.
Cue.
The irony. He hates himself and you.
I know.
And
but he hates me, but he still looks great. But I was thinking about Kirk Cameron. There was like a scene in Growing Pains. This was age appropriate because I was like 11, and like Kirk Cameron had taken his shirt off, and I was just lost in thought about it.
Was that the Leonardo DiCaprio years?
Probably. And I missed my moment to shake the bells, and Father Healy.
You were just daydreaming.
He was mad.
Father Healy, lighten up. worry about the other issues going on with the altar boys.
I loved Father Healy. He was a ginger. He was great. Travel down the road back again. Girl, cornbread hemp is back. Can I tell you, I think all of us are feeling the craziness of life at the moment.
Yeah, it's getting harder and harder to relax.
Yes, well, let me tell you what helps me unwind, girl. Cornbread hemp's CBD gummies. I truly love them. I take them at the end of every single day.
Yeah, they're formulated to work with your body, not against it. They're a natural way to relieve aches or discomfort, or if you just want to sort of like relax at the end of the day.
I gotta tell you, I like go home after recordings or work or whatever, even after the gym, and I'm like replacing my end of the day bourbon with a CBD gummy. No hangover, feeling great the next day, just like nice and relaxed at home with the fam.
Yeah, and sometimes you kind of need to like just disconnect from what we just talked about for 3 hours.
Totally.
So it's nice to chill on the couch.
Yes.
Have one of my CBD gummies and just sort of zone out.
And let me tell you, they use only the best part of the hemp plant, the flower, for the purest, most potent CBD.
And all products are third-party lab tested and USDA organic to ensure safety and purity.
I gotta tell you, I love this change to my routine. It feels healthy. It feels clean. I really love it.
Guess what? Because it is.
I know.
It is.
Totally. So fam, right now, TCO listeners can save 30% on their first order.
Just head to cornbreadhemp.com/TCO and use code TCO at checkout.
That's cornbreadhemp.com/TCO and use code TCO.
That's right.
Ditch the bourbon. Go for the CBD.
Yeah, have a great night, everyone.
Totally.
Seriously.
No matter what you do.
No matter what.
Girl, Ollie is back. Look, this is about replacing that crap dog food you've been... I'm just saying, the mass-produced kibble, it's unappetizing, it doesn't smell good. You know the dogs don't actually love it. Ollie is here to change all of that. It's all about the pet nutrition. They do human-grade meals made with the highest quality ingredients, no mystery meats, no artificial junk, just real, minimally processed food made in U.S. kitchens.
Yeah, so here's how you get started.
Yeah,
You just fill out Ollie's 30-second quiz, and they'll create a customized meal plan based on your pup's weight, their activity level, and all this other health info. Because all that's very important.
And the thing is, you get this welcome kit, right? So for first-timers, Ollie will send out your pup's first box with 2 weeks' worth of meals, a free storage container for mess-free serving, which I love. Thank you, Ollie. And a guide of how to gradually switch them over to their new diet.
Yeah, and you can really see the results. So like 1 to 2 months on Ollie can help dogs reach a healthy weight.
Yes.
Because if they're overweight, that can lead to hip issues and joint issues. Like you want your dogs to live as long as possible.
Absolutely. You can customize your plan. So Ollie offers 3 meal plans to choose from, so you can choose between a full fresh plan, fresh topper plan, or mixed plan with their freshly baked recipes for your special little fur.
Yeah, and it's not just meals because they have treats and supplements too.
Truly.
Dogs should be getting treats all the time.
Golden loves the treats.
They're
We're
so
big
good.
On treats in our house. We do it for rewards.
Well, yeah.
See, I'm learning.
Well, yeah.
So fam, dogs deserve the best, and that means fresh, healthy food.
Head to ollie.com/TCO to tell them all about your dog and use code TCO to get 60% off your welcome kit when you subscribe today.
Plus, they offer a happiness guarantee on the first box. So if you're not completely satisfied, you'll get your money back.
That's ollie.com/TCO and enter code TCO to get 60% off your first box.
I gotta tell you, it feels really good to do something good for your pup.
Right?
It really does.
Oh, we love them so much.
Yes.
So, September 2nd, 1980, the church approves a, quote, minor exorcism.
What does that mean?
I looked it up. If you've been to a baptism, you've been to a minor exorcism.
No
it's a
way.
Prayer here, a prayer there. May the force be, what are they, may the...
No, it's may the force be with
may
you.
May the
no.
what be with you?
May peace be with
peace
you.
Peace be with you and also with you. All that, like, bada bing, bada boom, we're out.
Wait, we have to shake hands.
That's, oh, right.
May the peace be with you and also
and
with you.
And then sometimes, I mean, don't people just go like, don't they just do the nice nod? We're not all shaking hands still, right?
But you're supposed to shake, you're supposed to, like, make contact and shake hands.
Don't tell me what to do.
I'm
just saying the church.
That's what Jesus wants.
And is that before or after they pass the basket around for all the money they want you to get?
That's probably after. Yeah.
You know what's a really great movie, everyone, now that we're talking about it? Spotlight. You should watch the movie Spotlight.
Yeah.
That is based on a true story, and
that
that's some
true.
Real shit. The most, like, oh my God, part of that movie is right at the end because they do, like, on-screen text.
Oh, right.
And then it's like, sexual abuse cases have been uncovered in the following places. And it's like 5 pages all over the world. That hits hard.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
amazing. I mean, this is its own kind of abuse. Like, this is truly its own kind of abuse.
For sure. Because now, like, sorry for that detour, but watch Spotlight. And I feel very, very, very strongly about that. Just that whole situation. Anyway, so this has to be done in a church, this little half exorcism.
And even though it's a half exorcism, the priest warns the family that these exorcisms can be so intense that the person can actually die.
Right. So the Warrens are like, we're in. So they basically just, like, do a mass.
Yeah.
Then the room is suddenly ice cold, which everyone knows, like, that means that you're in the presence of
but
a spirit.
But, like, was it? I want to hear everybody say, suddenly we could see our breath. We only hear that from Brother Alan. It's like everybody had this shared experience, but we're only hearing it from one person.
Right.
You know?
We're not hearing it from Carl, the brother who was here.
Yeah.
We're not hearing it from
anybody
else. Carl's
in the documentary not very much yet, and you'll find out why later.
Right. So then suddenly, like, the demon takes center stage. David is hissing and growling, calling the priest names, like, trying to attack the priest. They're holding him down. At one point, we're told David's tongue swells up and he can't breathe.
Well, this is why they die. You're probably fucking choking him because everyone's holding him down.
Arnie had taken the crucifix and placed it on his forehead.
He's on your head.
You can see it sizzle.
You can, quote, see it sizzle?
Right.
No.
Like, no.
That didn't happen.
But now this is when everything changes. Because the scene that's being described is that everything is like coming to a fever pitch.
Yeah.
David is clearly being taken over by this evil, evil, evil demonic spirit.
Yeah.
Something needs to be done. The Warrens aren't doing shit. The priest isn't doing anything. Like, it's just, it's really bad. Like, he's going to die,
I think Lorraine's over there being like, this one's getting a little out of hand, Ed. What do we do?
She's probably like, the movie's going to be so good.
Totally.
So good. We're going to make so much money. So it's like, it's bad. So, like, he's about to die.
Yeah.
David's about to die.
Yeah.
This is when Arnie, the boyfriend, stands up. Arnie is dating Debbie, the sister. They moved into the house together. The house is what started all of this. David first saw the demon.
Yes.
Now, Arnie's been with the family the whole time. He's been here talking to us the entire time.
Yes.
Arnie, the boyfriend, stands up. Arnie, this is your time to shine. Says to the demon, like,
don't fuck us on this, Arnie.
He's just but a child. Leave him. Take me.
Arnie
invites the demon into him as a way to save David, the 11-year-old. The demon's like, I'm RSVPing yes to this invitation. Leaving the boy. Now, according to Arnie, he goes, I felt a coldness come over me, like ice cold. Once again, no audio of any of this.
Of any of it.
Not the invitation.
Nope.
Not any of it.
Nope. And meanwhile, like, and also everyone else in the room, their face all falls. Because everyone knows, the priest knows, the Warrens know.
Ed goes, you can't do this.
You don't challenge any kind of demonic entity, ever. We didn't know any better. He thought he was just trying to help David.
I remember my grandfather saying to him, you shouldn't say that. That just opens a door for you to be attacked. And he was right.
You do not take on the devil. You do not confront the devil in such a manner.
The demon jumped out of David into Arnie. Now, David's fine. Arnie's cold, but he's all right. And it's not like the demon went from being at 100 inside David to at 100 inside Arnie. He's just, like, there now.
This is all so gay. Like,
and David's, like, super happy because he's free of this demon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everyone is relieved until they're not.
Right.
Because Glenn Cooper, Connecticut detective, is here. And he's like, I heard about some strange shit going down over at the Glatzel house.
Now, like, he hears that there's, like, possessions and all. The only reason he knows about this is because of the neighbor's noise complaints. Like, these fucking possessions. Possessions are loud.
Right.
And, like, people are throwing over tables all night long. Like, imagine living next door to this nonsense.
And the Warrens get ahead of it because Ed and Lorraine Warren head down to the police station.
Yeah.
And Ed's like, I'm a famous demonologist. And Lorraine's like, and I'm a noted psychic.
I mean, he introduces himself to the cops as a demonologist.
And the cops are like, what? Like in, what do they say? Like in Home Alone, where it's like, oh, we got a live one. We got a hyper on two. You're like, what? So like, they say they're there to tell the police that Arnie Johnson invited the devil into himself in an effort to save David. And I'm like, we're going to law enforcement now?
I thought
you hated outside
home. Well, because they're trying to say, like, someone's going to die. Like, Lorraine is saying, as a psychic, I can tell you with authority, somebody's going to die.
And she does, like, in The Conjuring 2, which I know it's a movie. I'm just saying, like, what they want everyone to think is that she, like, sees what's about to happen and she can warn Ed to be like, we got to get out of here now because... Yeah. What is Bathsheba or whatever, the scary witch in The Conjuring?
The witch, yeah.
Is like gonna, like she sees, she has visions, right?
Yeah.
So Lorraine sees.
Meanwhile, hashtag justice for Bathsheba. She's like, was a real person and she's really buried in Connecticut.
I know.
And like was not a witch. You know what I mean?
It's a great movie.
Like just not a witch.
It's a good scary popcorn movie.
Yeah,
I love that shit.
And Patrick Wilson is so hot.
Yeah. So he's very nice.
Oh, is he?
He's very nice.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah. I have it on good authority. I know someone who, he's very nice.
Okay, good.
So Lorraine has a vision.
And she said, I see serious injury or a death with a knife. She wanted to put us on notice that a crime could occur, that she actually, I want to make it clear, she said, I see this happening as a psychic.
So she's warning the police that a crime is going to occur. Arnie Johnson is going to commit this crime because he's possessed now.
Yes.
And a knife is going to be involved. And guess what, everyone? That's exactly what happens.
So Arnie and Deb get an apartment and it's connected to a dog kennel and Deb becomes a dog groomer.
Now, they are living in this house and we're learning that they're so happy and relieved that the possession is over. Arnie is willfully forgetting that the possession only stopped because he invited the devil into his own body. And I guess it's a snooze fest in there because the devil has not shown his face since.
It's like, this is all just reminding me of Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, which is apparently like super gay coded.
It's very gay.
Because it's all like, he's inside me. And every time we're saying like the devil's inside Arnie, it's just like the 5-year-old in me comes out.
Right. So Ed and Lorraine Warren were like, how dare you? Like they screamed at him. David, the kid is like, whew, finally, I don't have to pretend there's a demon in me anymore.
Oh my God.
So Debbie works at the dog groomer. Her boss is Alan Bono.
And like, it's all one compound. Like their apartment is connected to this dog kennel where she's a groomer.
Yeah.
And Alan is her boss.
That happens all the time. Like people are like,
oh, I guess that's true. Like you live upstairs. Yeah.
So it's February 16th, 1981, 5 months after Arnie invited the demon to live in his body. And the demon was like, yes, I'll live in your body. And I won't say a word about it. Because Arnie has been living his life happily.
Right. That's the whole thing is that like he's currently possessed, but showing no symptoms. You know what I mean?
After this demon was in the process of killing the 11-year-old.
Right. Yeah.
Arnie's like, come to me.
Yeah. And everyone was like, this is bad. And Arnie's fine.
But now for 5 months, everyone's been happy.
Yes.
So here's what happens on February 16th, 1981.
According to Arnie.
Arnie wakes up.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel great.
No.
He's not feeling great.
Could it be the devil inside him?
Or is it second digestion?
We don't know. It's one or the other. Yeah.
They had plans to hang out with Arnie's sisters.
Yes.
So Arnie and Debbie drive to go get them, and they all have lunch with Alan Bono, who's Debbie's boss and friend.
Yes.
Now, they go to Alan's house for this lunch, so that's where they are. They're not at the house that started this whole possession business. Like, they're out at Alan's house.
Yes.
They have some wine with lunch. According to Arnie, Alan's getting hammered.
Right. In the middle of the day, he doesn't want his, like, young sisters to see this.
He's, like, uncomfortable because I guess this guy is, like, drunk around his sisters.
Uh-huh.
And if that was the case, like, I get it.
Yeah.
We don't know how old his sisters are, whatever.
Right.
The vibes are off. He wants to go. Now, they start to leave Alan's house. Arnie can't remember a single thing after
blacks
that.
Out. He's walking down the stairs after lunch, blacks out. Now, my take on this is Arnie drank too much at lunch and got blackout drunk.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right. But we know now, we're going to get a lot of information quickly and then kind of go back and dive into it.
Yeah.
We know that Arnie Johnson, it's not a question.
Yes.
Arnie Johnson has stabbed and killed Alan Bono.
Right.
Because Sister Debbie tells the police Arnie and Alan were drinking.
Yes.
They had an argument and it, quote, developed into a physical fight.
In the apartment, there was an argument and it developed into a physical fight. Ended out on the front lawn of the kennel, about 13, 15 feet from the front door. During this fight, Arnie pulled out a knife that he had in a sheath and he repeatedly stabbed Alan Bono.
And stabs Alan Bono to death on the lawn outside.
Four times.
And then Arnie runs into the woods.
Now, David, the original possessee, tells us.
The 11-year-old.
Deb, the sister, calls. She's crying. Before she could say anything, David, the former possessee, the 11-year-old, has a vision of a dead person.
Now, Debbie is scared that Arnie's going to go kill somebody else.
Right.
Because he, like, snapped, had this horrible, violent episode, kills this guy, and then runs into the woods with the knife. So yes. Debbie is like warning people. She thinks he's going to go kill her family. Like,
right. Everyone's kind of on that page that Arnie, now possessed by the devil.
The devil went from 0 to 1,000 out of nowhere. Not a single peep after he went into Arnie's body until they're at lunch.
Every time you say he's inside him, it's just...
it's like ridiculous.
I know. Travel. Girl, ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic is back, and I couldn't be happier because it is rooftop happy hour season.
Yeah, we went out last night, and guess what? We both showed up to work.
Totally.
Because we did our ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink as my first drink of the night.
That's exactly how it works. So fam, ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle tough mornings after drinking, and it works.
Yeah, here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut.
Yes.
It's the buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking.
Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down.
Just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow.
And I gotta tell you, the pre-alcohol tastes good. It's a little shot. You just throw it back.
It's so easy.
It's so easy. And fam, every time I have pre-alcohol before I drink, I notice a difference the next day. Even after a night out, I can confidently plan on doing 2 full episodes of GP, knowing it's gonna be amazing.
Yeah, everyone has stuff to do. We're not, like, calling out of work anymore because
no.
We had fun the night before. We're not doing that. We're
no.
too busy.
So fam, spring is here, which means more opportunities to celebrate warmer weather, rooftop happy hour.
Well, before drinks on the patio, that tropical vacation, or your best friend's wedding, don't forget your ZBiotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great the next day.
Go to ZBiotics.com/TCO to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use TCO at checkout.
ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
No questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/TCO and use code TCO at checkout for 15% off.
Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
Good times.
So David, the 11-year-old, is now terrified. He thinks that Arnie and the devil are coming to kill him.
He has a vision that Arnie, possessed by the devil, is coming to kill him, formerly possessed by the devil.
And that never happens because
right.
the ambulance driver who is taking poor Alan Bono to the hospital
yes.
sees Arnie Johnson running on the side of the road, calls the cops, and Arnie is arrested.
Yes. Now, Arnie, like, he's as he tells it, he, like, comes to at the police station.
How convenient. What
how
timing.
Convenient. No idea why he's there, what he's been doing.
And I asked him, I said, why am I here? What's going on? And they said, well, you just killed your friend. I said, I did not. I totally did not believe that. I said, you're totally wrong. Alan's fine. We left the house. He goes, no, he's dead and you killed him.
The cop's like, no, he's dead and you killed him, girl.
Like,
he's dead and you killed him.
Even if you, like, even let's take all rationality and logistics
yes.
aside for
yeah,
a second,
yeah.
right? This is still not the 5 steps of possession that we were just talking about
exactly.
earlier.
Right.
None of this is even a little familiar to what happened before. This is step 5.
Right.
We skip steps 1 through 4.
Exactly. Just like, fully fucking possessed
it's bullshit.
Out of nowhere. Yeah.
So, and now Detective Glenn is here and he's like, this guy didn't look possessed. He looked like he was in a fight. He didn't sound possessed.
No.
He didn't act possessed. He just looked like a guy who just killed somebody, who got into a violent fight and killed someone.
Now, Arnie will say, and I'm sure it's true, he's never been in trouble before ever in his life. He's never been arrested. Like, he's saying, it couldn't have been me. It had to be the devil. I've never been in trouble. I've never gotten a speeding ticket. I've never been arrested.
Arnie's also 19 years old at the time.
Right.
That's so insane. He's 19.
I know. And he's like, I went from 0 to murder. Like, I never would have done that. And I'm like, well, we're about to find out some more information.
Like, he's going to tell us he's possessed. And, like, miraculously, he's like, what?
Right.
Where am I?
Well, Father, 5678, Father Maximus is back to be like, no, this happens all the time. It's called transmigration.
Okay.
They've got a term for it.
But this case is going to be known in the press as the devil made me do it case. Because
exactly.
that's what Arnie's defense lawyer is saying. And Martin, the defense lawyer, is here today.
Right.
I was not a believer in the paranormal. So before I really got too much involved, I said I wanted to do some research. My partner thought they were crackpots and said, listen, stay as far away from this case as you can. But I wanted to hear more.
Martin's like, I don't know.
I'm a little interested.
Feel like a spooky road trip.
This is where I can see a little bit of myself in Martin, because I'm like, well, look, I think all this is bullshit, but if I got invited to go to Ed and Lorraine's like creep museum, I would definitely go.
They very famously used to be a museum. It's like, yeah, Zach Bagan's favorite. I think he purchased it or something.
Did he?
It was like his favorite place in the world.
Yeah.
So they would like, they would take all of the like evil things or like where demonic entities would sort of live and, yes, like put them in glass cases to like protect the world from them.
We, it was, see,
like, they're the only people who can have control over it,
right,
because if it's in the hands of us lay people, we'd be all,
well,
be possessed.
Exactly. But we see the actual Annabelle doll. Now, it's my understanding in the movies, the Annabelle doll is like a scary looking doll.
No, she looks, the real Annabelle looks nothing like her.
The real, I looked it up. The real Annabelle doll is a haunted Raggedy
it's
Ann
Raggedy
doll.
Ann.
It's Raggedy, yeah, Ann. And I was like, I Googled Annabelle doll and like the doll from the movie comes up, but then the Wikipedia page comes,
right,
up. It's a fucking haunted Raggedy
Ann.
Raggedy Ann. It is, that is delicious.
In the movie, in The Conjuring, they have, because I think at the end, it ends with like, we're sort of at their museum,
uh-huh,
or at their house or whatever. And Annabelle used to be kept, I don't know the status of where everything is now. I think Zach Bagan's like,
has
a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But she was in like a glass case that was like, under, do not touch under any circumstances. And there are these stories where like, idiots would like open it and like mess with Annabelle and then like die in a car crash on the way home.
Are you serious?
There's stories. I don't know if it's real
or
not.
Do we know why the Annabelle doll is possessed? Like where that comes from?
There's a whole story to it. I don't know like the full.
I saw that it was an actual a haunted Raggedy, yeah, Ann doll, and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, watch, I'm going to be found dead tomorrow morning just for making fun of her.
Oh my God.
I'm going to get hit by a bus on the way home tonight.
I don't know where she lives now. Is she with Zach Bagans?
She's going to walk around the corner of our booth in this creepy glass door.
Man, it's scary, man. So Martin, the defense lawyer, is so charmed and so spooked by the Warrens. They,
yeah,
make a believer out of him. He takes the case.
Hook, line, and sinker.
So the devil made me do it defense, we learn, has been used in England 3 times.
Yeah.
Every time the verdict was not guilty. 2 arson cases and 1 rape case. Go fuck yourself, everybody.
Can you believe that?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, of
100%
course.
100% I
yeah,
can.
Yeah, yeah.
Mike Allen is a journalist. He's like, I have to tell you, I've never seen or covered anything like this in my life.
Before or since.
Before or since.
Yeah.
He's like, you know what? This is crazy. I'm going to focus just on facts and see where they take me.
Well, because he says it's like really hard to prove or disprove any of this. It's just these two fucking crackpots saying everything is haunted and give us $1 million.
And then all the tapes they have are like right before the hauntings, right before.
And why does nobody
right
call
after
them out on it? Why does nobody say, but girl, why can't we hear the banging on the table?
Because the people who would do that aren't going to waste their time at the Warrens.
Yeah, you're right.
You
and
know,
everybody else
like,
wants it to be true.
And they, you know, they got famous and they're using, you know, it's, they're,
yeah,
sort of just like, if you ignore them, maybe they'll go away.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So the Warrens give Mike, the journalist, these audio tapes of Arnie telling the demon to leave David and go into him. Apparently that audio does exist. And he plays them on this news radio station that he's working,
yeah,
at the time. So Mike, the journalist, is having a hard time getting people to talk about the exorcism,
uh-huh,
or exorcisms in general, because the church doesn't want to talk about it. They won't answer Mike's questions about if David was levitating. And I'm like, hi, someone was murdered.
Right.
Well, I don't give a shit if David, the 11-year-old, was fake levitating.
Right,
someone
right, right.
Someone was killed in cold blood on their own front lawn.
Because Mike the Journalist, his point
is... Like, I feel crazy.
No, I know. But Mike the Journalist is saying it would be so easy. He's talking to the people who were there. And he's like, just tell me there was no levitating.
Which
tell
is
me.
The family,
exactly.
By the way.
Right,
it's
right,
the, it's
right.
The Warrens and the family who
exactly.
called in the Warrens because their poor little 11-year-old was possessed.
Yes,
and
yes.
And even they're not talking.
And so Mike the Journalist is like, they wouldn't say the levitating didn't happen. So I guess I have to believe that maybe it did. You know what I mean? It's one of those things
so
where
annoying.
It's like, why are we here? Why are we doing this?
But finally, right on time.
Yes.
A little late, because I could have used him earlier.
It's a little late.
Carl, the oldest brother, is here. We haven't seen him in a while.
We have not. And I just said this documentary finally takes an interesting left turn.
Because he's here to talk about what was really going on with the family. Because, of course, we have not heard the whole story.
He's just saying this. All of this is bullshit.
In front of people, she tried to portray herself as a holy roller and all this other stuff. But there was not even close to reality. She didn't even go to church or any of this stuff till all this stuff broke out with David. And when Lorraine Warren stepped in the picture, that's when everybody came like, oh, we got to wear scapulars, we got to wear rosaries. And I wasn't buying it.
only when Lorraine Warren came around that she started saying we have to be like this, like good religious family.
And now before that, though, before the Warrens entered the picture, he says that his mother, quote, had an agenda. And if things didn't go her way, she'd throw a tantrum.
Yeah.
So I'm immediately hearing like severe mental health issues that were unaddressed.
Yes.
So what Carl is saying is that she was kind of an opportunist for like drama and bullshit.
Yeah.
Everything was sort of unaddressed. He grew up in an abusive household. And now that like the Warrens are here, now Judy's sort of focused on that.
Yeah.
And Carl isn't buying any of this because Carl says, yeah, I was 15 when my brother was supposedly possessed.
Right.
Now he's going to be really honest about what happened.
And he's saying like they want to play it off as the devil made me do it. He says that is so far from the truth. I know because I lived it.
And he's here to say like Alan Bono was murdered and no one is talking yes. about what happened. Like this is bullshit.
Yeah. So we go back to July 14th, 1980. It's 7 months before the murder of Alan Bono. And Carl, he's like a young kid and he's outside and Ed and Lorraine show up like for the first time. And Carl is saying to Ed and Lorraine, my family is crazy.
Yeah.
All of this stuff with like the screaming and the yelling and the banging, like this is all insane. And he says that like what Ed and Lorraine did was they gathered the family around the table and they're like, well, if this young boy is really possessed, what he would be doing mm-hmm. is swearing at his mother.
It's the false confession thing. They
exactly.
give ideas,
yep.
they give suggestions, they give you a roadmap. They tell everyone what to expect from a possession.
So that they know exactly what to do.
And now Carl is here to say only after this, you know, the growling, grunting, screaming, name calling.
Yeah.
That's what Ed and Warren, Lorraine are like. We should look out for that.
Yes.
Only after that conversation in front of David, the possessee.
Yeah.
Only after that conversation did David do any of this. He learned what to do from the Warrens.
He was told what to do. And
it's why the devil is calling his mom a douchebag.
Right.
That's an 11-year-old.
Exactly.
Come on.
And it's, you know, Carl makes the very good point that like all of this stuff, now we're watching David writhing around in pain and screaming and yelling. And the focus was simply to document it, not to help him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That
yep.
like if my brother was actually experiencing this, nobody cared about fixing it. They just wanted to document it.
Right. Now, Carl tells a story because he says like every time they were over almost every day.
Yes.
And it was like a performance.
Yeah.
And when they weren't here, David wasn't doing any of that.
Right.
So it's not like, oh my God, get over here. It's happening.
Uh-huh.
The Warrens would come in and it would be like showtime.
Right.
But one time David was, as the demon, really, really screaming at his mother. Like horrifying things, calling her every name in the book.
And like punching her and hitting her.
Now the father, who is hating every second of this and doesn't believe in it.
Yeah.
Overhears this and storms into the room.
You hear slap.
Get over there, sit down.
He goes, now I said to stop.
Enough. No more, it's got to stop.
And sure enough, the devil sat down and was very quiet. So I'm glad at least he listens to my father.
He says, so I'm glad at least the devil listens to my father.
Now, of course, we don't condone that shit. But
no,
the point
right.
Carl is making is very clear.
Yes. It's so obvious that, like, David is now like, oh, shit. Like, you know what I mean?
I'm going to be grounded.
Exactly.
And the real demon doesn't do that shit. The real demon doesn't give a shit. The real demon would have hurt the father. You know, like, if this is a real possession, it doesn't matter. You can't, give me a break.
Exactly. And so Carl tells us on the night of the murder, he's outside working with his dad. The mom comes out screaming, we've got to get down to the kennels. Something happened. Debbie is hysterical. Carl is, I think, 15 years old. They get over to the place where Alan Bono has been stabbed and is laying dead. Carl is the one to go over to Alan and turn him over. He sees the 4 stab wounds. He sees Alan gasping for air. He basically watches Alan die right there on the front yard.
And Carl is there to say, in the middle of all this, not a single word was uttered about possession.
Right.
Debbie, the sister, is on the record saying there was a fight.
Yes.
And again, what about the 5 steps of this shit?
Right.
Like, it's just suddenly this guy snapped. Like, that's not how possession works.
No. And
whether you believe in it or not, I know how I sound. I'm just saying.
Right. And we learn that Arnie, the murderer, was very possessive over Debbie. And we also learn that Debbie and Alan, the murderee, the victim here, were either currently in a relationship or had previously had a relationship. Everyone is drinking. Alan and Arnie get into a fight, and Arnie stabs this guy to death.
Because Debbie admits to police, no, this wasn't a love triangle. I did have a relationship with Alan in the the past, but that's over.
Yeah.
And she tries to say that the stabbing had nothing to do with this. And I'm like, Debbie, girl, respectfully, it has everything to do with this.
But that's
your
whole
boyfriend
thing.
Was a jealous, controlling nightmare.
Right. Like, Arnie would have us believe that, like, his best friend Alan and he were having a casual cocktail one afternoon, and the devil took him over and murdered this guy for no reason. No, this guy used to date your girlfriend. You guys were all drinking now. Who knows what was right. said? Who knows what was done? And you killed him because you were jealous and you were hammered.
And Arnie also conveniently has to, like, victim blame or just like talk shit about Alan. Cause remember, he's like, oh, he was drinking and there were bad vibes. Like, I didn't want him to be around my younger sisters.
Yes.
And it's like, that's a really convenient thing to say.
Right.
To try to take even more responsibility off yourself.
And
you
also,
killed him.
The other guy was the drunk one, not me.
I was
trying to get out
but
of there.
But Debbie, your own wife, is like, no, everyone was drinking.
Exactly.
So this on-screen text, like, Netflix, do better. The demon murder trial begins October 28th, 1981.
Well, Carl tells us,
I did not know that the trial was beginning. And on the first day of the trial, my parents actually gave me money just so I could basically skip school and go do what I want to do for the day. They were petrified of me getting involved in this story because I knew this is all fabricated.
And if he got called to testify, he was going to blow the roof off the whole thing.
Now, the prosecution wants the maximum sentence, which is 25 to life. The trial is a circus. It's packed every day. The Warrens are loving this. It's great for business.
And it's like, who can blame them? This is the most sensational thing to ever fucking happen in this town in Connecticut.
But like, someone was murdered. What about Alan Bono?
I'm totally with you on that. Like, of course the victim is getting locked. But like, what did we think was going to happen? Like, something like the Warrens should not have been allowed to act like this.
It's crazy.
This is insane.
It is like the shit they got away with in plain sight is unbelievable. So the judge reads everything that's presented and stops the trial before it starts because the judge rules that, quote, demonic possession is not an acceptable defense. The fact that someone had to say that out loud is ridiculous.
And then we get 5 minutes of Arnie being like, but then I wasn't able to speak my truth. I was possessed by the devil. That is the truth. So now I can't even speak my own truth in court. Like, Arnie believes it or is trying to pretend that he believes it
to
this day.
He has to. Yeah. Because now, because they can't use any of their, quote, evidence, any of their witnesses, whatever. So to me, I'm like, this is a very clear-cut case because he killed this guy.
Yes.
So Arnie stabbed Alan Bono to death. End of story. Now the defense switches to self-defense.
Right.
Which doesn't make any sense based on the sheer number of stab wounds and what happened.
Exactly. Like, there, and like, and everybody knows, even the defense attorney is like, self-defense is the best we got here. But it doesn't make any sense.
And with self-defense, which is manslaughter, which is a much lesser charge, but Arnie takes the stand and he goes, which was hard since I didn't remember a single thing that happened.
Right.
And I'm like, then what truth were you going to tell in the last trial? You fucking liar.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, I mean, he was just going to get up there and say that, like, the devil made me do it. Like, that's it.
100%. So we get the verdict November 24th, 1981. Not guilty of murder in the first degree, but guilty of manslaughter in the first degree.
He gets the maximum. He gets 10 to 20 years in a maximum security prison. And, like, Debbie, the sister, has the audacity to jump up and scream at the judge. She calls the judge sick and insane.
No.
Then chases him out and in front of all the photographers. Like, there's like a, it's the cover story for this, for the front page of the paper the next
day. It's so shitty.
Yeah.
Judy, the mother, takes this opportunity to get her 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah.
She, quote, wanted the story to be told. I'm like, well, she learned from the best, from the Warrens.
But that's what happens. Like, Ed and Lorraine take the mom to Hollywood. Fucking Dick Clark has dinner with them.
Picks them up in a limo.
Yeah.
Takes them to dinner.
This is the point of the whole thing. They were trying to make another Amityville.
Yeah.
Like, Ed and Lorraine Warren were trying to make another Amityville. They're telling her, your family's going to be millionaires. Let us handle everything.
The Warrens show up with paperwork. And my mom's like, should we get a lawyer? And Lorraine's like, no, dear. William Morris Agency has a whole floor of lawyers. Yes, they do, but it's not for them. It's for use.
The mom smartly is like, should we get an attorney? And Lorraine's like, no, girl, we got
We're
you.
We're all
like,
friends here.
Exactly.
No, the parents got $4,500. The Warrens got over $80,000.
Yeah, and they're still making money on it today from the Conjuring films.
Because the Conjuring movies are based on the Warrens and their characters in those movies. And like we said, the third one is called The Devil Made Me Do It based on this case. So Ed died in 2006. Lorraine died in 2019, like a while after the Conjuring movie started. So there's also, like, I know I have to mention it. There's a lot of dirt on the Warrens. Like,
oh, yeah.
Statements about Ed being a creep and harassing people and assaulting women and, like, proof that they're scammers and grifters. So, like, they're just not good people.
No.
And they really took advantage of, because I think like Judy, the mother, and we'll get into it lastly.
Yeah.
What she was really doing. But I think a lot of people, like, they were just preying on scared, vulnerable people.
Right.
You know, or just like erasing the victims to make it all spooky, like Amityville or with Alan Bono. And
exactly.
It's like, that is so gross.
They had an agenda in every story. They had to literally find a vulnerable family that they could tell them how to pretend to be possessed.
Yeah. Or a family that wanted attention. It was someone who's easily manipulated in some way.
Exactly.
Whether you were scared and vulnerable or you just wanted money and like, yeah, teach me how to exaggerate, Warren.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'll say whatever you want.
It's kind of like the psychology of the way that everybody just knows not to talk about how they're all faking it, but they all know they're faking
it's
it. It's crazy.
So Arnie was released from prison in 1986.
Ugh.
And he and Debbie remained together until she died in 2021.
And he's weirdly not possessed anymore. Like,
yeah,
where'd the devil go?
So the devil just like jumped out of him?
I know. He proudly says he never had an exorcism, but he's not possessed anymore.
And the devil didn't do anything until this moment with Alan Bono.
Right,
like,
right,
it's such
exactly.
bullshit. So he only served 5 years. Arnie's doing just fine. We're not done yet, though.
No, because Carl, after their mom dies, Carl and his wife are going through all of her things. And they find notes. Apparently, the mom obsessively kept notes about everything.
Journals.
Yeah. And he finds this one that says something to the effect of, like, the family all had their medicine tonight and everything was fine.
We found out that she was putting Somnex in our food. And she's been given to the whole family for quite a long time. I believe my mother used Somnex to control all us boys and my dad.
And she was giving it to everybody, including the dad, as a way of, like, controlling the family.
And Arnie, the boyfriend.
Yes.
So the kids, her husband, Arnie, the boyfriend, Carl's like, my mother used the pills to control everyone. And Somnex has long-lasting effects that if you're taking it for years and years on a daily basis, it will cause mood swings, it'll cause hallucinations.
Hallucinations.
And
so, like, now there's, like, the chance that David and Arnie both actually were seeing things.
Had long-term negative effects of being drugged on a regular basis.
Yeah. I mean, that is so fucked.
It's so fucked.
But David, the son, is like, my mother would never do that. She would never have drugged the family. That's not what happened. I was possessed. Haven't you been listening?
And like, what's better?
Right.
If you're David and you're like, my mom was drugging me my whole life, or the devil was inside, I think a lot of people would be like, I was possessed for those 6 weeks.
Of course. And like, David, this is his whole identity. Like, he's like, this has to be true for him. Like,
yeah.
This story is his whole identity.
This is it. But guess what? It never happened.
It never happened.
Never happened.
Oh, girl, we did. What's it called?
It's called Devil on Trial.
Yes.
Justice for Alan Bono.
I know.
God. Like,
we,
he can't
even
be forgotten
in this documentary,
this.
We barely talk about him.
Like, Devil on Trial, we barely see the trial. We barely hear about it. I think because there was really nothing to say.
Yeah.
Like, they
yeah.
couldn't use The Devil Made Me Do It, so then they had to shift to self-defense. But it really, really sucks.
It really sucks. Fam, I'm on tour. Come and see me. My next three dates are June 6th in Boston, June 23rd in St. Louis, and then June 26th for Pride Weekend in New York City. Come hang out. We're hanging at the bar after. We're having so much fun. The bar in New York especially is awesome. It's at the Green Room 42, and the bar is like outside, and it's like, it's really fun. It's a really fun place to do it.
Fun.
Tickets at patricktours.com.
And we're on YouTube, so you can watch us.
Go subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Glory.
It really is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are we doing next, girl?
We are doing The Biggest Heist Ever.
Ooh.
On Netflix. It was a $4.5 million Bitcoin heist. One of the biggest heists ever, conceived by two of the biggest idiots ever. Like,
great.
They want to have rap careers, and
oh my
trust
God.
Me, they should not. They're just like these like insufferable people who had like this $4.5 million cryptocurrency heist.
Great. Well, stay tuned for the trailer for that, fam, and we love you.
We love you.
All right, bye.
Talk soon. Bye.
The Department of Justice announcing the arrest of two individuals in Manhattan this morning.
Back in 2016, hackers broke into an online currency exchange stealing 120,000 Bitcoin, which at the time was worth $70 million. But today, it's worth a staggering $4 billion.
Federal agents seized the tokens from digital wallets belonging to husband and wife, Ilya Lichtenstein and Heather Morgan.
When you talk about the arrest of people involved in a $4.5 billion heist, you think that the criminals behind it are going to be these serious, hardened people. But in reality, the people behind this particular case, they are these wacky, cringy individuals who are posting these totally insane videos on social media while they are trying to pull off this incredible crime.
Razzle, come!
I'm a motherfucking bad bitch. Go on, make me a sandwich.
That was cringe. That was trash.